Give me your take, your definition of the mind parasite. I'd like to get your view on that.
Okay. Well, if I can, I just want to talk a little bit about regular parasites and then build from there to give it a little bit more of a rational basis for people that might be skeptical.
And these aren't the regular ones that we get with insecticide. This is something else we're talking
exactly,
about.
Exactly. But let's just talk about the regular ones for a minute because people often underestimate them. Now, in nature, we have three of the most classic relationships are parasitism, predation, and symbiosis. These are relationships of energetic transaction. Well, actually, parasitism seems to be the most common, or at least parasites outnumber all other types of species 3 or 4 to 1. There are more parasites than any other type of organism on the planet. All species have parasites. And many of those parasites themselves have parasites, just like the mosquito is a parasite and it carries malaria, another parasite. Sometimes the second parasites even have parasites. And so as human beings, we have many. AIDS is a parasite, tuberculosis. And parasites have an ability to take over their hosts and to even travel through several different animals to complete their life cycle. You can read about some of these amazing biological parasites in Parasite Rex by Carl Zimmer. And one of the things that biologists talk about in relationship to parasites and evolution is what they call the Red Queen Hypothesis. Now, this comes out of Alice in Wonderland. There's a moment in Alice in Wonderland where Alice is traveling with the Red Queen, and they start running faster and faster, but she notices that they're not getting anywhere. And the Red Queen tells Alice, "Now here you see, it takes all the running you can do to keep in the same place." Well, this is what biologists are telling us now about the coevolution of parasites and host species. Because parasites outnumber us, and because they evolve so quickly, and because they are so much cleverer than people realize, that other species need to constantly evolve just to maintain, just to tread water. In fact, some biologists at Oxford, and this is gaining a lot of credence now in the biological world, believe that sexual reproduction, as compared to asexual reproduction,
right,
sexual differentiation that's so much a part of, you know, our whole world, came out directly as a way to compete with parasites. The only way to keep up with the parasites and the genetic adaptations that they were constantly doing to become more effective was to create sexual differentiation, which through greater genetic novelty gave us a chance to keep up in that evolutionary war with the parasites.
Keep up or fight back?
Really, keep up is all we've been able to do. We are the first species that really has an ability to recognize what's going on with parasites and to do something about it. Now, another aspect of this is that we are capable, as human beings, of missing an entire dimension of life. Now, this was the case with the whole microbiological world. Until the year 1674, nobody, no culture, as far as I know, had a clue about the microbiological world until a Danish shopkeeper, his name was, I'm not sure if I can pronounce it, but it was A.D. Leeuwenhoek. And he invented the first microscope, and in 1674 he saw the first microbiological organism, a protozoa, which is probably a giant in the microbiological world. If you were to tell somebody in 1673, "Hey, did you know that you're not a single being, but you're a colony of 100 trillion animals?" They would have you burn at the stake.
Yeah, they wouldn't believe you.
You could possibly think of saying. They had no idea about it. In those days, surgeons washed their hands after surgery, but not before. So then when we discovered that, hey, there's not just all these things down there, we're actually made of them, and there's a fantastic variety of species. And, of course, we would find the same classic relationships of energetic transaction, parasites, predators, and symbionts. And so the case that I'm making is that there are energetic organisms. Now, we are the only culture that does not recognize them. The only culture that does not recognize energetic organisms is scientism, fundamentalist materialism. They're recognized in Christianity. They talk about the incubi and the succubi.
Right.
In China, they talked about the kuei, and so many of their customs in daily life, these were like disincarnate spirits. They in their medicine. For example, the 361 points of the 14 main meridians of acupuncture, 17 of those points have the word kuei as part of their main or secondary names, as points where these entities could feed or attack us energetically. And Western science can't explain how acupuncture works, but it does admit that it does work. It's just that right now we have a blind spot about ourselves as energetic beings and about energetic organisms, though every other culture recognizes them. So that's what I'm talking about. I'm saying that there are the mind parasites or energetic organisms, and like other life forms, many of them are parasites, but there's many, many different species.
Why are they the way they are, Jonathan?
Well, they're the way they are because everything has to feed off of an energy source. You do, I do, plants do, everything has an energy source. So for
it's survival, right?
The host, exactly. So they're going to look for the richest deposit of energy they can find. So blood is a popular one, right? Mosquitoes will go after mm-hmm. that. It's a rich source of energy. Well, what's the richest source of energy on this entire planet? Well, it's obviously human energy, human psychic energy, human sexual chi. That's what's dominating the whole planet right now. When you look about your studio, everything there is the result of human energy.